Hi, everyone. I'm Scott Branley.
And I'm Alicia Coakley. Every member of the church has a story to share, one that can instill faith, invite growth, and inspire others.
On today's episode, we're going to hear how the Mormon Wolf of Wall Street found gratitude in suffering behind bars. Welcome to Latter-day Lights. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Latter-day Lights. We're so glad you're here with us today, and we are grateful to have Shane Baldwin with us joining the show. Shane, how are you doing today?
Awesome. Scott, Alicia, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much for jumping on. It's funny because when you had messaged us, I have the privilege of being able to kind of like vet the stories beforehand. And so I always do a little FBI snooping, and I just always embarrass you. It is what it is. So, so I did a little snooping and I found your profile picture on Facebook, and I was like, oh, whoa, like you and your wife, like, should just be on like the cover of every magazine out there. You guys are so pretty. Like, you guys are just pretty, like, just like a really pretty couple. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I like send a picture to my husband. I'm like, honey, look at how pretty these people are.
Oh, you're so kind. You're so kind.
My wife, no, I'm serious. That. So I was just like, wow, fantastic. I don't know. Like, anyone who's listening should just come and watch the
episode. You don't have to go to prison, but they do say that prison does preserve you. So I've been preserved for 5 years in prison. So and my wife that you mentioned, that's the first girl I went on a date with when I got out of prison. And somehow I sold her on marrying this ex-con. So I feel really blessed.
Well, I was very happy. I was like, I don't know. I love pretty things.
It's
pretty
funny. People. Yeah. She looks at people's faces and she's like, oh, they're so pretty. I look at their hair. I wish I had hair like that.
Scott is just admiring the weft going on there.
I know. I'm jealous.
I am
of your
too.
Hair.
I'm pretty, my hair is pretty flat today. I need whatever product you're using, Shane. I need
Yeah. My wife actually uses my product too. So we share products. So.
Well, then you're going to have to let me know what that is so I can put it in my beauty routine.
Sounds great.
Oh, awesome. Funny. Well, aside from being a beautiful couple, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah. You know, I'm an author, so I have a book out. It's called The Honest Lie. We'll get into that. I'm a speaker. I was a co-owner of a sales organization, and I just sold my interest about 3 months ago. And I did a YouTube series called Million and 60 that I just got done filming. I spent 60 days, and the show was me making $1 million in 60 days and showing how that's possible. So that's on YouTube. Cool. And so, you know, I've been doing a variety of different things. I'm involved in a number of different startups, and I'm heavily involved in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so I'm excited to be on your show and talk about my experience with the gospel and my journey with it.
Awesome. And now you've been married for how long?
So I've been married for 3 years. I got out of prison in 2020. And 2 weeks after I got out, I sent a DM to my now wife. Aww. And she accepted a date. It was the first date I went on. And after going on one date with her, I knew I had to close that deal. So that's the biggest deal I've ever closed. And I've closed a lot of deals. So yeah, I feel really, really fortunate.
That's awesome. Any kiddos yet?
I have four.
Okay.
And she didn't have any. And so we're in our 40s. She doesn't think she can have kids. But I don't know. This week she's been waking up in the morning sick. So I told her, I said, maybe you're pregnant. So who knows?
All right. Well, we'll just put a little fingers crossed if that's what you guys want.
That's what the Lord wants. I'm down.
There you go. I love that. That's the easy way to do it, right? Perfect.
Awesome. Well, Shane, we're really excited to hear your story. Why don't we just get right to it and turn the time over to you, my friend?
Perfect. So I was adopted as a baby through LDS Social Services. My birth mother was, I think, 15 years old when she got pregnant. Wow. And I was able to meet them when I turned, I was 33 years old, and somebody called me and said, hey, I think you're my brother. and I was able to reconnect. My birth parents ended up getting married after they had given me up for adoption. And I was able to ask her, I said, why did you make that decision to give me up? And she says, I've never told anybody this, but an angel came to me and told me that's what I needed to do. And that was really powerful for me to learn that. So I got adopted by Dwight and Cindy Baldwin. They couldn't have kids. They didn't have any kids. So I was their first child. And I got adopted into the most incredible situation. And I think the Lord kind of knew that I was rebellious by nature. So my mom and dad are super straight arrows, and they raised me, you know, in the church and in the gospel, and every morning playing throughout the house would be the primary hymns. So I grew up, you know, in the church. My dad was my bishop when I was a teenager, thankfully. So I never wanted to go have to talk to my dad about anything. So I was a pretty good teenager. I was a pretty good athlete in high school. I played football and basketball. And then at 19 years old, I decided to go on a mission in 1999. I got called to South Africa. And
Scott went there.
Yeah.
Scott, which
I went
mission?
To Cape Town.
Oh, no way. So are you familiar with the language Xhosa?
Yeah.
So my first several companions, I was in Johannesburg, and my first several companions were Xhosas from that tribe. And I said, teach me the language. And so, and I learned all the different dialects, and it was just a great place. Scott, you were probably there in the, mid 90s, early 90s?
Right after apartheid. Yeah. So like 95 to 97, I think it was. Yeah.
Incredible time, right? I mean, the church was brand new in the townships, and, you know, the church is really new. And so I had just some incredible experiences. To share one briefly, I got sent to an area called Tabanchu. It was my second area. And I got a call from the mission president because I wasn't supposed to be going to that area. I was supposed to be going to a different area. And he said, I have to change your assignment. I said, well, how come? He said, well, your new companion is going to be Elder Maribe. Elder Maribe is from Nigeria. He said he just pulled a knife on his companion, Elder Hansen, chased him around the apartment. And so we have to separate those two. And Elder Maribe is going to be your companion. And I'm like, oh great. Oh,
joy.
So he said, don't worry, though. You'll only be there for maybe one transfer, 6 weeks. We're going to shut down the area. The area only has 6 members of the church, and even the branch president's inactive. And we're going to shut it down. And you have to drive 45 minutes to the area because the missionaries kept getting robbed that lived in the area. So we had to remove them from the area. So not only was I getting a companion that was a little crazy, I was going to a really tough area. And I remember after getting that call, I went into the bathroom and I just knelt down and I said, Heavenly Father, you put me here for a reason. I need to be with this companion for a reason. And I'm going to this area for a reason. Just help me. And I went out to that area and we had so much success in that 6 week period, reactivating people and baptizing people. It got to the point to where I had the mission president buy me an above the ground pool because we were meeting in a trailer. And we had so many baptisms that we needed like a pool to do it in. And we just had one of the most amazing experiences of my life in bringing people to Christ in that area of Tabanchu. By the end of my mission, I was working with Elder Robert C. Oaks. He was the, area president at the time. And we were able to go out because we had had so much success in that area, they had to build a chapel. And so at the end of my mission, the chapel was built and I was able to go out there with Elder Oaks and dedicate that chapel. So my mission experience was just spectacular. And I'm sure, Scott, you can attest the people in South Africa are just some of the most humble, God-fearing, loving people on planet Earth. And they were just so receptive to the restored gospel. So I got home from my mission and I married a girl that had written me on my mission. I went to BYU Hawaii. I got involved with a company called CleanFlix, owned some franchises.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember CleanFlix.
Yep, I remember them.
I sold those in 2004 and had some early success. And I got offered a job to go work at Merrill Lynch with my dad. So what you're about to hear is the real life story of the prodigal son. So I worked with my father for 3 years. And after 3 years, I decided I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to start my own company. So I left my father's business and I had a great gig. I played golf almost every day when it was sunny. And I had front row seats to jazz games. And my job was just to go and convince people that had money at other financial institutions to transfer it to Merrill Lynch. That was my job. It was a great job. And I wanted to do my own thing. So in 2007, I left my father's business, started my own company called Silverleaf, ended up finding a niche and an opportunity to buy bad debt secured by real estate all over the country from failed banks. So during the middle of the recession, I end up raising hundreds of millions of dollars and buying these assets. And I was young. I was 28, 29, 30 years old as I was doing this, living a pretty fast life. I had, you know, airplanes and fast cars and nice homes. And I eventually ended up owning a private golf course that I was the owner of. And I would say a lot of this went to my head. And I started doing things that were the wrong things. I started what I call managing information, not telling my investors the whole truth, and just not doing the right things in business, just not having integrity and assuming that I'll be able to figure it out until I couldn't. And ultimately in 2012, 2013, the FBI decided to investigate me on what's called securities fraud. They held an investigation and they offered me a deal to go to like a federal camp at that time, which I turned down. So they held a grand jury to decide if they were going to indict me. And ultimately they decided not to indict me. And that was a huge wake up call for me. I remember, you know, whenever we have these wake up calls, I think we turn to the scriptures or we turn to God. At least that's the way it is for me. And I started reading the Book of Mormon. And there was a phrase that I saw multiple times that almost jumped off the page at me. And it says, to go no more out. It's also mentioned in the New Testament, that phrase, to go no more out. And I thought to myself, I don't know exactly what that means. But whatever it does mean, I don't want to go out anymore. So I went on this quest for purpose. I went on this quest to figure out how I could best utilize the talents and gifts that I'd been blessed with. The last thing I wanted to do was return home after my earthly mission, return home, report to my heavenly father, and have him go, Shane, that's not what we sent you down there to do. And it's go out time. So I get sent out again. I don't want to do that. So I started in divesting myself from my business and affairs and investing a ton of time into the study of the scriptures, pondering, meditating, and really asking God what my purpose is here. By 2014, I got this magic trick where I can make $1 million in 60 days. And sure enough, 34 days later, I made $1 million.
Jeez.
It's a story that's in my book. I met a guy at the gym. He had some assets. I bought him for $500,000 and sold him for $1.5 million. Wow. I made $1 million. And I had never asked God what I should do with my money. So I went up to the mountains. I love this hike in Layton. It's called Adams Canyon. I went up Adams Canyon and I prayed and I said, listen, what do you want me to do with this money? And I swear to you, I heard a voice say, Shane, I want you to give it away to random people, not to a charity, but to random people. So I was like, okay, can I pay off my house? It was like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, can I use some of it to live on? He was like, yeah, that's fine. But the majority of it, you need to give it away. So I started in Utah, just finding random people that were in need. And then I decided to take massive action. I called one of my friends who owns a door-to-door company. And I said, listen, I want to go out and I want to sell your product door-to-door. And he said, okay. He didn't know what was going on because he knew me as this rich real estate guy, but he had somebody that was willing to go sell for him. So I ended up going out to Natchez, Mississippi, knocking on people's doors. And my real purpose was to find people that were in need. And it's really interesting what happened for me in that moment. Because my focus was on serving and helping other people, it was as though I was given some amazing gifts for that time. I would knock on somebody's door and I would know her name. I'll give you an example. I knocked on a door, lady came to the door, and I'm like, your name's Pam. She's like, yeah. I'm like, you have a daughter that's sick. She's like, yeah. And I said, you owe some medical bills. I'm here to pay them off. And it was like, it shocked me. And this continued to happen while I was in Natchez, Mississippi. While I was out there, the kids in the street were like, hey, what they call you? I'm like, well, my name's Shane. They're like, no, no, no. What your nickname is? I'm like, I don't have a nickname. So if you go to Natchez, Mississippi, they called me Sugar Shane. That was the nickname. But I just had this amazing experience going door to door. And I would tell people as I would help them, I would say, hey, don't tell anybody. Because I didn't want people to just come up to me knowing that I was giving away money. I wanted things to happen organically. Right. And I wanted the spirit to kind of direct me as to where to go and who to help. And so that was an incredible experience. I came home from that experience, went back to those mountains, still not knowing exactly my full purpose, prayed at the same place, and continued to have things kind of revealed to me of what I should do. And the more I focused on what my purpose is and tuning in to the spirit, the closer I got to understanding my purpose. What happened, though, is I told God, I said, listen, what I think you're asking me to do is something that's too big for me to do. And I don't know if I can do it. And if I got to sell all my belongings and go live in a tent to fully understand exactly what you want me to do, I went straight Lehigh. Like, I'm like, I'll go do that. And about 3 months later, I got arrested by the state of Utah and found myself in an 80-foot cell. It took me a minute, but I realized that this was the tent God wanted me to live in. And and I tell people this all the time, you know, that experience for me was like going to God's university. But when I first went there, I thought, how can this be? How can the state of Utah picked up the very charges the FBI had dropped several years later? I didn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. I thought it was behind me. And at this time, man, I'm doing everything that I should be doing. So at the time the FBI is investigating me, I'm doing the wrong things. And at the time I actually get locked up, like, I'm doing all the right things. And so I was really confused by this. And my wife decided that it was best that she divorce me, and I don't blame her. I mean, I'm in jail. So she divorces me and I'm at my rock bottom. And I start asking the other inmates, like, hey, how do you commit suicide? I didn't want to live anymore. I didn't see purpose. So I had lost purpose. And so I'm talking to the other inmates and they're like, well, you can hang yourself. And I'm like, okay, how do you do that? They're like, well, you got to kneel down, tie it to the top bunk and just hunch over. I'm like, well, I'll stand up. And they're like, oh, you can jump off this ledge and it's like a 20-foot drop. And I'm like, no, I'll just end up paralyzed. So every way that I learned of how people try to commit suicide, I'm like, it's not 100%. So I came up with my own plan. Wow. My own plan was I'm not going to eat and I'm not going to drink for as long as I can possibly go. And so for 13 days, contrary to what the internet will tell you, I went 13 days with no food or no water. And during that time period was when I started writing my book. So here I am at my rock bottom moment. And I had been a student of guys like Dale Carnegie, who wrote the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, or Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich.
Yep.
And I have a golf pencil. In fact, I have my original manuscript right here. This is from prison. This is the original, my original writings. So I have a golf pencil and these papers, and I just start writing all the positive psychology tips and things that I had learned. And that's what I start writing during that time period. On the 13th day, I just knelt down in my cell and I poured my heart out to God and I asked him to stop my heart. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. And ultimately I fell asleep. And when I fell asleep, I had a dream. I remember I was in this field and this man came to me and he said, Shane, I'm here to offer you a deal. I'm like, you know, I'm a deal guy. Give me a deal. He said, I'll let you travel back to three different time periods of your life, making a different life decision, and I'll show you what your life looks like. I'm like, awesome. I know exactly where I wanted to go. I wanted to go to 2007 when I left my father's business. And so I said, take me back there. And my different life decision is I stay working at Merrill Lynch. He said, okay. And he showed me. It was like, I don't know what the movie is. There's some movie where some guy's able to do this. Mm-hmm. A Wonderful Life, or I don't know what it is.
Right.
But this is what was happening in my dream. So I go back to 2007 and he shows me my life. I only have three kids in this instance. I have four kids, but I only have three in this timeline or whatever you want to call it. I stay married to my wife. I'm very successful at Merrill Lynch. I'm a multimillionaire. I become a bishop, a stake president, a mission president, a general authority. My life's amazing. And I'm going, oh, this looks pretty good. I think I'm going to go ahead and accept this. And he says, well, don't you want to see what your children's life look like? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. What about my children? He's like, well, you only have three. And my children's lives, all three of them, turned out horribly. They were addicted to a variety of things, just horrible. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't want to do that. Well, my life's amazing. Their life isn't. I don't want that. He said, okay, well, what's option number two? I said, option number two, let's go to 2011. This is when I started making mistakes in my business, not being totally honest, not being totally upfront. What does it look like if I'm totally straight up and I just do things the right way? He said, I'll show you. In this instance, I divorce my wife. I marry somebody else. I go on to be one of the Forbes 400 richest men in the world. And, you know, from a worldly standpoint, I have everything that the world can offer. I said, okay, this looks pretty good. What about my kids? He said, okay, you only have three. You have no relationship with them. They have no relationship with you. They don't want a relationship with you, and you don't really care to have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I said, well, what about my relationship with God? He said, you don't have a relationship with God. You're so into yourself, you have no place for God. So I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to do that either. So I'm down to my last one. And I remember in my dream kind of pausing, thinking about all the different times in my life I could possibly go to. And the thought came to my head. And I asked, what does it look like if I stay right here? And he said, Shane, I'm so glad you asked. You're going to be here for 5 years. During the next 5 years, you are going to help so many people that struggle with addiction, or that are simply, they struggle with confidence, and you're going to be there to lift them up, and you're going to teach them the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. But the person you help the most is yourself, and the relationship you develop with Christ is amazing. He said, after the 5 years, you get out, you find love again, you find your soulmate, and you become successful. And at this moment in time, showed me exactly what my purpose was here on this earth. And I said, okay, what about my kids? In this instance, I have all four of my kids, and they all turn out incredible. And I asked the guy in the dream, I said, why is it in this instance with me going away for 5 years, why do my kids turn out so well? And he said, because they've been through some adversity, they're battle tested. And this adversity was good for them, even though it was hard. So I woke up from that dream. I accepted a plea deal, told my attorney's like, hey, I think you can beat this. I said, no, I did the wrong thing. Knowing in my head, I needed to be there for 5 years. I accepted a plea deal. The judge sentenced me to a 4 to 30. What that means is a minimum of 4 years, maximum of 30 years in prison. And so Utah's indeterminate sentencing. What that means is it's up to a board of pardons to determine how long you're going to be in there, in between 4 and 30 years. So I went to see the board of pardons for the first time in December of 2016. I had been incarcerated for 18 months at that time. And they gave me what's called a rehearing for April of 2020. I got arrested in April of 2015, and April of 2020 is when I would see them again, exactly 5 years to the date. Mm-hmm. And when I saw them in 2020, they released me. I remember getting that news and just kind of dropping to my knees and just telling the Lord, listen, I'm an instrument in your hands. I'm here to do your work, whatever you want me to do. But during those 5 years, I got a degree in psychology from California Coast University. I read 20 to 25 books a month while I was in there. I would tell you that the scriptures opened up to me, that I understand the words of Isaiah. In my mind, Isaiah seems to be the easiest, most simple book of scripture for me to understand.
Wow.
It never was prior to that. And I don't think it's anything special with me, but it was special with the circumstances I was in, where it was quiet in there. I didn't have to worry about how I was going to go make money. I didn't even have to worry about what I was going to eat. I just knew when I was going to eat. And when you're in that place, in that state of humility, the scriptures just really opened up to me. And so I really appreciated that time that I had So when I got out, I was all excited. I had written this book and I thought I needed to go and get this book going. So I was talking to some big publishers and they offered me some really big deals. But I have learned at this point to not do anything big without consulting with the Lord. Mm-hmm. I tried doing things without consulting the Lord and it didn't go so hot for me. In fact, it sent me to prison. So I went to the Lord and said, "Hey, should I take this deal with this big publisher?" And the answer was no. Wait till 2023 and I'll let you know what to do. But in the meantime, go ahead and start a business and reconnect with your kids. And 2 weeks later, as we mentioned earlier, I met the love of my life and we went on a date. And after the first date and really the first kiss, we both knew that this was meant to happen. And so we were married, you know, a few months later and the rest isn't history. It's becoming history, but I'm super happy. I started a business and, you know, that's kind of my story. So I know that's a lot.
Oh my goodness.
Threw up a lot of information on you guys, but yeah, that's a little bit of my story. What's also interesting, I did not get excommunicated.
Really?
So normally when you go have a felony, the handbook would say you would get excommunicated. Mm-hmm. And I didn't. And when I got out, I had several meetings with my stake president that resulted in me, while on parole, able to even get a temple recommend. And so that was also a unique circumstance and another blessing while I lost everything else, all my money and you know, my first wife and my freedom. The one thing that I had the whole time in there was my membership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think the Lord really does know kind of what we can take, and not losing that was important.
Wow. So let me ask you real quick. Whenever I think about prison, obviously, like, I think big and tough and scary and everybody wants to beat everybody up. And, you know, like, I have no idea the reality of it, but did you have any fear going into prison, not knowing how long you were actually going to be there, other than your dream that, you know, that you believed that you were going to have 5 years, but you didn't truly, truly know until you were released. Right. So like, you're like,
yeah, I mean,
hopefully it's just 5 years.
Tons of fear. In fact, yeah, even knowing everything, even having that dream that I felt like was from God, mm-hmm. we still, even for me, I didn't trust it, you know, and I was afraid. Yeah. I mean, I was nervous going in there. But I knew I was in the hands of the Lord. I knew that there were people in there that I needed to teach the gospel to, that I needed to share the Book of Mormon with. Mm-hmm. And that if I treated it like I was on a mission, and this is what the Lord had called me to do, I was also confident that he would protect me. And that's certainly what happened. I never had any problems with anybody in there. In fact, those who were the hardest core gangbangers and the scariest guys mm-hmm. were some of my best friends in there. And they were some of the people that I ended up teaching and that were also the most receptive to the message of the restored gospel. So I felt like I told a young man today that just came home from his mission. I said, "Yeah, I've served two missions. I served one when I was a young man. Then I served a 5-year mission." He says, "What kind of mission's that?" And I said, "I served 5 years in the Utah State Prison." But wow. I treated it like it was a mission, and the Lord had called me to the prison. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting when we think about where Jesus left. I think it says in Peter or something that he went and visited the spirits in prison. So mm-hmm. I just said, "Hey, I'm just doing what Jesus did, only not the spirits, the physical prison." So,
well, and even Jesus was arrested, right? Like, we've got tons of different prophets and scripture historian or scripture heroes that did go to prison too. So you're kind of among the best of the best there, right? Yeah, I'm just saying, I mean, if you look at it, you know what I mean? Like, Joseph Smith was in prison when he passed away. And so it was, you know, I can see how, you know, from a world's perspective, you can think that's the worst thing ever to have happened. But I love that you let it be a mission, you know, that you were able to change that mindset and stuff. And it didn't mean that it was that you were going in all happy-go-lucky right away. Like, it took you some time, like you were saying, with, you know, even your suicide attempt, which is a very, very serious thing. And, you know, like it took a lot of getting down to the bottom before you could start working your way back up to the top. Right. So did you ever feel like while you were in there, did you ever feel like you had added protection given to you?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, again, the scriptures are such a powerful thing. I think it's 2 Nephi chapter 2, verse 2. And he talks about consecrating thine afflictions. And I remembered reading that in the middle of my own affliction and saying, hey, if the Lord consecrated that affliction for this person in the Book of Mormon, he can certainly consecrate mine. And what that means is I'll be protected, I'll be safe. And I just totally bought into that. And because of that, I feel like I was directed to the right people to share the right message. But at the same time, you know, prison was a great teacher for me. I was able to learn some things. I was able to connect with people that I would have otherwise never been able to connect with. I'm able to empathize with people who suffer from addiction because I was able to spend time with them and understand what they were dealing with. And so I have this deeper love for my fellow man because of the time in there. I think I developed greater empathy. I remember thinking in there, how am I going to attack this when I get out of prison? Like, how am I going to explain to people? Because people are going to Google me. Yeah. And I decided that the best thing I could do is just be transparent and authentic. Mm-hmm. In my book, I have a quote in there that says, transparency is a superpower. And I really feel like if we'll just own our experience, all of it, the good and the bad, and we just own it and we're authentic about it, people can feel that. And then more importantly, for me, it was like, I now understood the atonement in only a way when you commit the kind of sins that I committed, that you can understand. And so the atonement has had such a huge impact in my life because I, more than most people, because of my sinful nature, had to utilize the atonement. And so to some degree, prison became that sanctification type experience, for me. And it was transformative.
Wow. Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah.
Can you share, any stories that you might have had in prison where you shared the gospel with somebody?
I'll give you one. There was a guy, they call him TK. He was a shot caller for one of the gangs. And he looks scary. In fact, if you look at him, his name's Jared Charles Lance. He's actually back in prison right now. I mean, he's a scary guy. And for 3 days, this guy's eyeballing me. And I'm thinking he wants to fight me. And eventually he approaches me. And he says, I have been told that you know where my dad is and you know how I can be with him. And I'm like,
really?
Has your dad passed on? And he said, yes. I said, I can share with you what I know. Who told you that? And he said, God did. And I said, okay. So we sat down and I began teaching him the plan of salvation. And I gave him the Book of Mormon. And he just gobbled it up. He just loved the Book of Mormon, loved everything about it, loved the war stories, and really bought in at that time with me to the restored gospel. That was one experience. I'm going to share with you another one. And this one's kind of like super near and dear to me. I was in there with a guy. And he was in the bunk next to me, and he became one of my best friends. But in 2008, he's a returned missionary. He was a member of the church. Wow. He found out his wife was cheating on him. And in a church parking lot, he shot her 13 times. I don't know if you remember the story in 2008. And I was in the bunk next to this man. And this man felt like God doesn't love him, that his what he had done, there is no chance for repentance to even happen. Mm-hmm. And he had completely lost his faith. And I started to become friends with him. And we got talking a lot. At the time when he committed his crime, he had two kids, 2 years old and 4 years old. He had not had hardly any contact with his two sons. And I call him Rags. I said, Rags, I promise you, if you draw near to the Lord, if you reconnect, number one, I'm confident the atonement can work for you, just like it can work for me and anybody else, no matter what you've done. I'm confident the atonement works. Mm-hmm. Get back into the Book of Mormon, come to church with me. And we started this journey together. About a year into the journey, he said, I really want to see my kids. I said, what does that look like to you? And he explained in his mind what it would look like for him to reconnect with his kids. And so we built up this meditation where he would envision just before bed what it would be like to be meeting with his sons and reconnecting with his sons. And I said, I promise you, if you will continue on this path that you're on, reading the Book of Mormon daily, praying, connecting to God, connecting to the Savior, and doing this meditation, eventually, I don't know when, I don't know how long it's going to take, but eventually you'll have that connection with your children. So I got out and I had the opportunity to connect with his ex-mother-in-law who was raising his two boys. And I was able to share with her how Rags had changed. And then I connected with his sons. And then his sons started writing letters to their dad. And about 2 weeks ago, he was able to see his sons for the very first time. Wow. His two sons, his 16-year-old son, his 18-year-old son, went and visited him in the prison. Oh, Rags calls me every Sunday, and he's just so happy. He's so happy, and he's seen the atonement work even for him. And he's had this experience connecting with his kids. He said, Shane, it was the greatest day of my life. And to have some involvement in that, to have the Lord put me there at that time to be around Rags and then see that come full circle. It was a 5-year process. We started this process in 2018, and in 2023, finally connects with his two sons. Mm-hmm. And he is just so committed to the gospel of Jesus Christ while he's in there. Feels as though, you know, at this point that he has received forgiveness and he feels good about who he is. So he has confidence again. And wow. So that was just another incredible story, that continues moving forward.
Oh my gosh. That is just, for one, I don't know how I would have responded to having a roommate that was, you know, that was a murderer, let alone to befriend someone who had done that, you know, and it's funny because I know I was actually just thinking about this today. We had our state conference, and for some reason, my mind was just going into this whole, I don't know, rabbit hole of things that I was thinking about, how we are one decision away from our best selves and our worst selves. You know, to be so confident as to say, oh, I'll never do that, or I'll always do this, I just think is so arrogant. You know, like, we really don't know what the thing is that's going to break us and is going to send us down a fork in the road for either good or bad, you know? And so I was thinking about that, but for you to be able to befriend someone and to have such a close relationship and to open up about the gospel and to have that confidence, because that is a huge thing to say that the atonement, you know, can cover even that. And we know it can. We know that the atonement can cover everything, right? Like, even the worst imaginable crimes and choices and everything like that. But for you to be able to, one, be inspired, and two, be willing to follow that inspiration, that is, it's just mind-blowing to me. It really, really is mind-blowing to
me. We're not put in positions like that where, no. I mean, we know that's true, but most people don't ever have that situation where we're talking to someone that's done something.
I mean, we have a hard time believing the atonement's going to work on someone who's at like a different political party than us, right? Like that's where the average person is at. They're like, oh, well, they believe this other thing, and so there's no way that the atonement's going to work for them. But I mean, just what an amazingly beautiful experience that you were able to have being surrounded with the people who definitely are in need of the atonement.
Yeah.
On such a huge scale, you know?
It was such a beautiful experience to see so many people work through their own process of the atonement. I saw some incredible miracles, even just with what they did inside of the church, as we would attend church weekly there. And I was bringing people along with me to church. It really did feel like a mission to me. While I was in there, I grew out a longer beard and I had longer hair. And I tried to emulate Christ in every single way, even in my appearance. And I really focused on that. One of the things that I'm doing now, I think it's in Doctrine and Covenants. It talks about practicing virtues. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, how do you practice virtues? And there's a talk, I guess not a talk, it's in the Liahona. It just came out by an emeritus 70, Lynn G. Robbins. I have it on the floor. It says, practice virtue continually. And it was a great article to kind of teach me how I can continue to practice the things that I learned in prison, outside of prison, and practice virtue. So I picked a virtue. Here's my plan. Once a month, I'm going to pick a virtue and I'm going to practice that virtue and I'm going to study that virtue and I'm going to try every day to really live by that virtue. So the virtue that I'm practicing right now is meekness. And I've learned some really cool things about meekness. I think when we hear the word meek, we hear the word weak, and that's not what meekness means at all. In fact, the Greek for meek is praus, and praus means strength under control. So to be meek means that you have immense power, like the Savior clearly had immense power. And during when they were whipping him and beating him and doing everything that they did to him, nailing him to the cross, at any moment in time, he could have just said to any one of those guys, you're dead, or he could have stopped anything. But it was his meekness that he controlled that strength. And so I'm really working on how do I make sure and control my strength? And that's really what meekness is. So I'm going to practice these virtues. I'm going to pick one once a month and try to do my best to practice virtues. One of the things that I've really tried to do as well, like I have this perspective now because of prison, you know, I call it my prison perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for the simple things, for the little freedoms that I have. And I try not to complain about things that I should not be complaining about. So I try to maintain what I call prison perspective every single day.
Wow. I love that. And I can identify with that in my own little way. Like when I was diagnosed with leukemia years ago, and there's a shift there when you have some big, huge, hard obstacle that comes into your life, there's an opportunity there to have that shift in perspective. And I think that when someone really gets it, it just doesn't go away, you know, like it sticks with you and really can just edify your life in such a grand way moving forward. So I love that you have that, you know, your own little prison perspective. I think if we all take a minute, we can look back and we can say, even if we didn't do something as big as go to prison or get diagnosed with leukemia or, you know, lose a loved one or get a divorce, or even if it's not something really big, I think we can find those places in our life where we can remember that we were low, remember that we were hurting, that we were alone, that we were confused, whatever it is. And we can kind of think about that perspective that we really want to have, and we can keep going back to that. So I love what, you know, in the intro here, we mentioned that you had this gratitude in suffering, you know, and I want to ask you, how do you maintain that gratitude? Like, do you have any daily routines, or is it, you know, a certain way that you pray? Is it just constantly thinking about that perspective? Like how do you continue to be grateful for the things that you have?
That's a great question, Alicia. So I do something every single day. I try and think of three things or three people that I'm super grateful for and something I'm grateful about. And once I've identified those three people, I send them a text or I shoot them a call, letting them know how grateful I am. So that's three different people. And it can be the same person. It could be my wife every day of the week. But yeah. I'm trying to show gratitude and think about that and then feel it. Like as I'm thinking about it, and I'll usually do it on my drive to the gym. When I call it my gratitude moment where I go through, okay, what am I grateful for and what's going on in my life? But I think for those of you out there who know the book, The Secret, mm-hmm. I think the secret to the secret is gratitude in suffering. Mm-hmm. It's being grateful when things are not going your way. And we will all experience things in life, some more than others, where mm-hmm. things aren't going to go your way. And, for me, what I did is I sat down when things weren't going my way. And I said to myself, what are the things I can be grateful for while I'm here in prison? And I just listed them out. And then I started finding things that I could do to express that gratitude. And it changed my whole experience. And I also found if we're in a hole, the fastest way to get yourself out of a hole is to help somebody out of theirs. So instead of focusing on my problems and my issues, I started learning what other people's problems were and what the issues they had and started realizing, oh, wow, like mine aren't as bad as theirs are. How can I help them out? And the more I helped other people out, the more it helped me out.
Wow. So almost like service is like the antidote for suffering, right?
Yes. Yes. Wow. Service is key. And it's simple things. I think when we think of service, we think we got to do these big, grandiose service projects. Mm-hmm. And it really isn't that. It's holding a door open. It's smiling and saying hi to some random stranger in the grocery store. These are simple acts of service that we can do every single day that can not only change somebody else's day, but can change ours.
I love that.
Interesting.
So, sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. So I'm just thinking about your life and the perspective that you've had. I mean, you've had times in your life when you had everything, right? Planes, houses, money. And then you've had time when you had nothing, right? And you were locked in a cell. Now that you've gone through all of these things, how do you view life? How do you view, how do you view money? How do you view freedom? And what do you see the future of your life looking like going through these things?
Scott, you're asking some really big questions, man. the way I view money now is as a tool. I found more joy, more happiness giving away money than I ever found making money. Mm. And as I look at, my freedom, what I choose to do with my freedom now is every day I'm focused on how can I lift somebody else up? How can I make somebody feel like they're $1 million? Like, what are the things I can do or what are the things I can say? And I'm praying for those opportunities daily. Now I have a quote and my quote goes like this. If you have a desire to change the world, which I do, then you have to change America. Because at the end of the day, America changes the world. Mm-hmm. So I am planning in the near future to launch a run in politics.
Wow.
I'm not super excited about some of the things that are going on in politics. Yeah. And I can either sit on the sidelines and complain about what's going on, or I can get involved. Mm-hmm. And I've decided that I'm going to get involved. How that's all going to work, I'll let the Lord kind of coordinate and orchestrate things. But I'm willing and ready to do really whatever the Lord asks at this point.
Wow. That's awesome. I can see Shane for president.
Let's go.
All right. We'll just do that.
I'm an ex-convict in there. Maybe that'll be the trick.
There you go. Wow. That is amazing. And I'm like seeing these correlations with Joseph Smith. Joseph Smith, he was going to run for president before he was killed, and
he had a whole platform. It's interesting. He had a whole platform on prison reform of all things.
Yeah.
And so obviously our prison system is broken. And that's one of the things that I intend to get involved in fixing is how and the types of things we do to incarcerate individuals. We need to truly provide correction facilities. Right now, they're just detention facilities.
Right. Yeah, I can see how I believe it's in Doctrine and Covenants. It talks about the difference between like punishment and what's the other word that I use for it? There's a difference between discipline and punishment. You know, punishment typically is not initiated through love, right? It's not done with love. It's like a very hard, vindictive, you know, cold type of thing. But discipline, you know, having to discipline someone, right, or reprimand them, that should be done with an increase of love, right? Yeah. So I love that that's a target of yours. I know we had Portia Louder on, and she too.
I've met her. She's awesome, by the way.
She's amazing. Yeah, she says the same thing. You know, like she ended up going to prison for I think it was 5 years as well, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And she sees the need, but she loves that there are so many people who are willing to change in prison. You know, like she makes this part of her platform is to go out and to speak to those who, you know, are still having to pay for their crimes and everything like that. And I love the light that she's bringing. I love the light that you're bringing. I just think it is so beautiful, like how unique our plan is from our Heavenly Father for each and every one of us. You know, like that's your call. That's not my call. But we both can bring light to the world. We both can use our talents. We can use our experiences. I really love what you said about being transparent. Because I think that sometimes when you're transparent with where you're at, how you got there, you know, and how much responsibility is really on your shoulders for being in that position, that it helps you, one, to not play the blame game, right? Like then all of a sudden you're not blaming Heavenly Father. You're not blaming another person. You're not blaming the world. You can just take that on and just say, okay, well, I'm here because of the choices that I made. Even if I didn't make every choice to get me here, I made enough of the choices that this is where I'm at and this is what I'm struggling with. But now I also have the opportunity to make a choice to move forward from here, you know? And I love that you were able to gain that insight of being transparent. So,
well, thank you.
Oh, yeah, man. So let me ask you real quick before we go, because you said you read 25 to 30 books a month when you were in prison. If you had to recommend, I'm going to say your top three favorite books that you just feel like anybody and everybody should read, aside from the scriptures, because we know that that's guys. We just need to read the scriptures. But what else could we read? What do you think are like your okay. top three.
I got the greatest book that nobody knows about. I'm going to pull it out. I have it sitting on my desk right here. So here's the book. Mm-hmm. You can see it says In Tune with the Infinite. It was written in 1898 by Ralph Waldo Trine. It's the greatest book that nobody knows about. I have not met a single human that's like, oh yeah, I know that book. I read that book. So that's number one. When you read that book, you will understand how true our doctrines are, because this guy's not a member of our church, but he's talking about so many things. He talks a lot about the unseen world and what we call the spirit world and how involved our ancestors are in our lives. Wow. So that's one. Book number two, Og Mandino wrote a book called The Greatest Salesman in the World, but I'm going to tell you that that's not his greatest work. His greatest work is called The Greatest Miracle in the World. And so you should definitely check out The Greatest Miracle in the World. And then the third one is the John Adams biography. Now, here's why. It's not necessarily about the American history. While you'll get a lot of that, it's an amazing love story between him and his dear wife, Abigail, and their correspondence when he's away from her, like brought me to tears. And so those are three books, two of them in the self-help, one of them's historical, that I would say definitely check it out. You can find In Tune with the Infinite. You can listen to it for free on YouTube. It is one of the most powerful books I've ever read.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then what about your book? So if someone wants to get a hold of your book, or is it just, you have one book out or do you have multiple?
Yeah, I just have one book out. It's called The Honest Lie, How to Navigate the Matrix. It's on Amazon. So you just, if you just Google, The Honest Lie, you'll find it. It's on Amazon. The audio book comes out in about a month. I'm recording the audio book and I had no idea. I'm doing it myself. Yeah. I thought it would take me 2 studio sessions, 4 hours piece. I'd knock it out. I'm only halfway through. It is way harder than I thought to read my own book.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like I've been practicing because my, you know, once I get mine out there, same thing. And I'm just like, I might just hire someone to do it for me because it's so hard. It is so hard to just read perfectly. But wow. Awesome. Well, we'll definitely add a link to your book in the description. So if anyone wants to just quickly be able to find that, they can go ahead and they can click on that. Do you have a website or anything else if people want to know more, or if they want to get in contact with you and have you maybe on their own podcast, or I don't know if you do firesides or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. The best way to get in contact with me is through Instagram. It's just Shane Baldwin. You'll see me on there. Got a lot of followers. That's kind of the main social media platform that I use. So yeah, Instagram, find me on Instagram, DM me. I respond to every DM and every message within 24 hours. So.
Wow. That is dedication. Very cool. I respond within a week or two. If someone texts me, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. Oh man.
Well, Shane, do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share?
No, I really appreciate being able to come on your show and talk to, you know, our fellow brothers and sisters out there. And I guess I'll leave you with this. There's so many people that I've talked to that are having what we've now termed as a faith crisis. Mm-hmm. And I'll have people reach out to me that are struggling with their faith. And my advice is this: get off the internet, open the Book of Mormon, read the Book of Mormon daily for 30 days straight, 15 minutes a day. And at the end of those 30 days, my guess is you won't have a faith crisis anymore. And so the Book of Mormon it's a magical book. And if we will take the time to read it, it can have a powerful impact on our life and can, you know, draw us closer to Jesus Christ, which is the goal. So, that's what I would tell people to do that might be struggling is go back, go to the Book of Mormon. The answers are there.
I love that.
Great advice.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Best way to wrap this up. Well, Shane, you are fantastic. We are so happy that you were able to come on here and share your story and share your light with us and with everybody who's listening today and who's watching. We really, really sincerely wish you the very best in all of your endeavors. We're going to give you an open invitation. You can come back anytime, share other stories that you have with us. We would absolutely love that. And we just want to thank our listeners as well. Guys, you guys have definitely been a big part of Scott and I's life this last year and a half, you know, almost 2 years. We're coming up our, you know, 2 years, this just a few months away. So we really appreciate you guys. We appreciate all of your comments and we appreciate when you guys write into us. If you guys have a story that you would like to share, if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast or you know someone who would be great, please be sure to go to LatterdayLights.com and you can fill out the contact information at the bottom of the page. We'll get that. That one we will respond to very quickly. I'm very good at responding to those emails within a day. So we would absolutely love to hear from you guys. So don't forget to reach out to us and definitely share Shane's story. So many good nuggets in it. You know, it was such a good, not just story, but like there's so much good advice and perspective and book recommendations. And so make sure you guys do that 5-second missionary work and click that share button and then comment and let us know what your favorite part of Shane's story was.
Yeah. Thanks guys. Shane, so much.
You bet. Scott.
It is very inspirational. And one thing I love about doing this podcast is it helps give me perspective on my own life. Mm-hmm. And I think that it does that for other people that watch it or listen to it as well. So
definitely.
I just really appreciate your perspective, your insight, your experiences. I mean, those are now part of me and hopefully I'll use them for good. So
yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Alicia, Scott, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Shane. We appreciate it. All right, guys. Well, that's all we have for you today. If you, like I said, would like to go ahead and share Shane's story, we would greatly appreciate it. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Latter-day Lights. Until then, we hope you guys have a wonderful week. Keep the spirit with you. And don't forget to think celestial. We'll see you guys later.
Yeah. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.